Okay, this is the Echaskol Shir, Le'ilu Nishmos, Mephraim Shul, Ben Avram Ariyah Kohen, and Chaya Tov Abbas, Eliezer Mendel HaKohen. Also, this Shir is dedicated to all our soldiers and all the victims of the Pigua today in Renana. God should have mercy upon all of them, and they should all recover, especially the children. We're in Echaskol, in chapter 14, towards the end of chapter 14. And we're in verse 20, well, 19 and 20. During this chapter, Yechezkel has been made aware by God that there are four general types, general categories of suffering that God brings into the world: by a famine, by natural disasters of wild animals, via plague, and via the sword. And the point he's making is, if any of these divine disasters, traumas, tragedies struck a city, particularly Yerushalayim, the only people that would survive it were people on the level of these three guys that Yechezkel has been told about: Noah, Daniel, and Iyov. And we ended up last year. We're about to go into verse 21, which changes the approach of this chapter, we ended last week's shiur with a question raised on this chapter by the Abavanel that needs answering. And the Abavanel's question is basically this: Why God picked these three guys particularly? Noah, Daniel, and Iyov. And it's true that all these three individuals saw the world, saw their lives being built up. They created a great life for themselves, and then it was all taken away, and then it was restored to them. Noah, before the flood, then the world was destroyed, and then he was rehabilitated and he rebuilt the world. Daniel lived near Yerushalayim at a wonderful time, and then Yerushalayim was destroyed, and then he rehabilitated himself in Babylonia. He became like the prime minister there. Iyov similarly attained great wealth and status, then he lost it all, and then he was rehabilitated and he got it all back, which is all, a parallel to what's going to happen in Yerushalayim, because in Yerushalayim that's exactly what's going to happen. They've got a beautiful city with a temple, and then it's going to be destroyed, and then they're going to be rehabilitated and brought back to Yerushalayim, and they're going to rebuild the temple. So the point about these three individuals is that they are parallels to what's going to happen, or what's going to happen to the people of Yerushalayim. And one of the points that the chapter's making is that these three individuals, had they been in Yerushalayim at the destruction, the Babylonian destruction, even their great righteousness would only have been the merit of their own righteousness would only have enabled them to save themselves. They wouldn't have been able to save their children. That's the point, one of the points that the first 20 verses in this chapter has been making. And the Abavanel asks the question, why just these three? After all, says the Abavanel, there are many people throughout the story of Jewish history, mentioned in the Torah, mentioned in the Tanakh, who have seen a beautiful world, they've seen their world collapse around them, and they've been rehabilitated and Bonui, and it's been rebuilt for them again. Moshe Rabbeinu is a great example. Moshe Rabbeinu was brought up in the lap of luxury, and then he lost it all. He killed that Egyptian, he had to go on the run, and then he came back, and he was built up as the great leader of Israel. So he also saw the world, his own world. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He had it all taken away, and then he was rehabilitated. And Naomi, the story of Naomi, also, exactly the same. She was grew up in the family of the princes of the tribe of Yehuda in Beit Lechem, in Bethlehem. Then they lost everything and they moved to Moab, where their children, their sons, married non-Jewish women. And then her sons both died and she was left with nothing. And then again, she came home and she was rehabilitated and she eventually got to see her daughter-in-law convert to Judaism, and give birth to the Davidic kingdom, which eventually in three generations' time would give birth to David HaMelech, to King David. So the Babana says, why just these three guys, Noach, Daniel, and Eov? He says, V'lov zocha shar tzadikim. And he doesn't mention any other righteous men from Jewish history. Shor, Chorban, Olamim, V'chayehem. They saw their lives destroyed during their lifetimes. And he says, I'll give you an example. Ki'ilu Lot. What about Lot? Lot was Abraham's nephew and his travel companion. He had everything. He had everything going for him. He was as rich as Abraham was. And then he moved to Sodom, to the city of Sodom, Sharah Horban Sodom, and then he saw the destruction of the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, Sodom and Gomorrah, and then he was rehabilitated and he was rescued. So why isn't he mentioned here? And if you want to tell me that Lot is mentioned because Hitzil Espinosov, that he managed to save not only himself, but he managed to save his children, his daughters. So Abarbanel says, he negam Noach Hitzil Espinosov, v'nizkar kan. Noach also saved his children. He took his children, his daughters-in-law, and they also went on the ark, on the Teva. And they were also saved from the flood. So that's the question the Abarbanel asks. And he doesn't give an answer. So I'm going to suggest an answer. I think the answer lies in a comment by the Radak in Bereishis, in the story of Noach. And in the sixth chapter of Bereishis, after the flood, the Torah tells us, Vayoled Noach Shlosh Avonim, that Noach had three sons. Shem, Chom, and Yofes. As Shem as Chom and Yofes. That he had Shem, Chom, and Yofes. And the Radak asks the question, listen, why does the Torah mention in chapter 6 that Noah had three sons, Shem, Chom, and Yofes? He already told us, it's already mentioned in chapter 5. In chapter 5, verse 32, it says it again, or it said it previously. Noah had three sons, Shem, Chom, and Yofes. Why mention it again after the flood? So, I think the answer is this. I think this is what the Radak is getting at. I think this is the answer to the Abarbanel's question. The Torah wanted us to know that these three sons of Noah were born after Noah had already been certified by the Torah. If you remember, the parasha of Noach begins with the words, Ela told us, Noach ish tzadik. Noach was a righteous man, tomim hoyob darosov. He was perfect in his generation. Es holehim is alech Noach. Even God used to walk with him. And says the Radak that mention of these sons a second time indicates that he raised his sons to believe in God. This is what he did. He not only was he a great righteous man, but he also brought up his children to believe in God and to walk in God's ways like him. Had his sons not been good people, says the Radak, they would not have been saved at the time of the flood, even though their father was a righteous person. As Yechezkel points out here in chapter 14, verse 20, which is the last verse we did, in vain in bath yatzilu hema b'tzikosim yatzilu nasha. That had Noah been in Yerushalayim when it was destroyed, he wouldn't have been able to save either a son or a daughter, even with his own righteousness. That he could only have saved himself. So, if you go back to the Abarbanel's question, like, why is Lot, his question, Lot, the erstwhile companion of Abram Avinu, who, like Noach, Daniel, and Eov, saw the world bonui, he saw the world, his life bonui, built, v'chora, then destroyed, ubonui, and then built again. Why is Lot not included here in Yechezkel, along with Noach, Daniel, and Eov? After all, even though the verses of this chapter insist that if one of these four curses came to any of these four curses that God's described here in this chapter, came to any society, neither Noach, Daniel, or Eov, if they were present, would have been able to save their own children. But clearly Noach did save his children at the time of the flood, as did Lot, who saved his own daughters at the time of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So why not include Lot? So I think what the redact says here is correct. Noach didn't save his children. They were saved because they followed in the footsteps of their father. They were saved by virtue of their own behavior, not based on the merit of their father. So that answers Lot's daughters were saved by him. They had no merit to be saved, whereas Noah's children had their own merits to be saved. So that should answer the Abarbanel's question why Lot is not included in this, because Lot actually did save his children who didn't deserve to be saved. So he wouldn't be included in this list of Noah, Daniel, and Eov. But it opens up another question, that if Noah's sons had the righteousness to save themselves from the flood, why aren't they included in Yechezkel's list here? Because if they were as righteous as their father Noah, they also saw their world bonui. They saw their world built, v'chorav, and then they saw the flood as the world was destroyed, ubonui. And they're the ones that came out the ark and rebuilt the world. So why aren't they included in this list? So that's a question that doesn't seem to be an answer to. But it certainly answers the Abarbanel's question. But what we need now is just a quick recap of the chapter so far, so that we can push on to the last two verses of the chapter, the last verses of the chapter, and understand exactly why God has instructed Yechezkel to talk about these four general categories of suffering that God brings to the world, and why he brings them, but under which circumstances he brings them. So really, if you want to make a recap really from verses 12 to 20, which is what we've been studying over the last couple of weeks in chapter 14, verses 12 to 20, the message of these verses is this: any nation that rebels against God, including or especially the Jews, can expect to be visited by at least one of these four categories of suffering: either famine, or wild animals, natural disasters, or the sword, or plague, or sickness, or pandemic. Furthermore, if God does not visit any one of these curses on the society, if God does visit any one of these four curses on a society, the only people that can expect to survive are people of outstanding righteousness. And even then, these men, these tzaddikim, will only be able to save themselves. So that is the general message of the prophecy so far, which is very dark, because as we know from history, and as we know from our study of Yechezkel so far, bad things are going to happen in Yerushalayim. But now this prophecy of Yechezkel in chapter 14 reaches the tachlis stage. What's the tachlis here? What can we take out of this chapter? Something warm and fuzzy and comforting. So we're going to get to the tachlis stage, where He's described what would happen if any of these four curses came to a society. Now God describes what would happen if he visited all four of these disasters on a single society, more particularly on Yehuda, the southern kingdom, and most particularly on the city of Jerusalem, Yerushalayim. Now, one would have thought from the reading of verses 12 to 20, which deals with these four types of curses, that if all four descended on a metropolis like Yerushalayim, the result of such an exercise would seem to imply an extinction-level event, like no one will be able to survive. However, this is where the prophecy, this chapter, chapter 14, starts to take an upward turn from an apocalyptic image into a message of hope. So that is the dark build-up, the dark imagery of verses 12 to 20, is really a segue to basically God's mercy at the end of the chapter, which is coming up now. So if we look at verse 21, chapter 14, verse 21, God says, Ki cho amah Hashem Elokim. So says God. Af ki arba shvotei haroim cherev haroim v'chai haroim v'deva shilachti el Yerushalayim. How much more so if I would send all four of my curses, the sword, famine, wild beasts, and plague against Yerushalayim, lahachris mimeno odom v'behema, ought it to cut off completely, destroy completely all living things, man and beast, man and animals from that city. Like if one of these plagues could do that, it's got the capability of destroying a whole city, a whole society, then if I brought all four on Yerushalayim, obviously that should be a signal, or that should be a catalyst for the total and utter destruction of the city and everything inside it, anything living inside the city. So, what we've got here, as the Abarbanel describes, after enumerating, these are the words of the Abarbanel here. He says, after enumerating the apocalyptic effects of God's four super categories of suffering and curses, famine, wild animals, which again includes natural disasters, the sword, the violence, and finally, plague and sickness, God, in this verse, seems to state the obvious. Obviously, says the Abarbanel. Here in this verse, we see the intention of this prophecy as a whole up to this point. That from the perspective of strict divine justice, if any one of these four categories of curses that God uses to judge mankind were visited on any nation to their fullest extent, that would signal the end of that society. And in fact, many societies, especially those that have persecuted the Jews, have disappeared as a result of one or more of these four curses. It should signal the end of that society, including the inability, says the Abarbanel, of both human and animals to survive that type of trauma and tragedy. And even people on the level of righteousness, such as Noach, Daniel, and Eov, should they have been part of that society, they would have been able to save their lives, but unable to save the lives of their families, their children, or their spouses. And obviously, says the Abarbanel, Kal Vachomer, an a fortiori argument, if all four of these curses were visited on any nation simultaneously or consecutively, as they're going to be shortly, brought on Yerushalayim, it should not be possible for anything or anyone to survive. God, by describing the situation and circumstance of his modus operandi in this way, is creating a segue that will play out in the last two verses of this chapter. A segue that leads to the word but, meaning true. Yerushalayim will suffer all four of these curses simultaneously and consecutively. And that should mean that no one should survive Yerushalayim. But that won't be the catalyst for their total destruction as it would be for any other nation. There will be survivors. And for those who paid attention to last week's Haftarah, or the Haftarah from 2 weeks, actually the Haftarah from 2 weeks ago, Yeshayahu, the prophet Yeshayahu, describes the Jewish people, the way the Jewish people are punished, as follows. Kav la kav, tzav la tzav, zer shom, zer shom. That whereas other nations, God lets them accumulate their transgressions and then utterly destroys them when the basket of transgressions is full. When it comes to the Jewish people, God punishes them kav la kav. Every time they go over the red line, God punishes them. Tzav la tzav. Every time they break a commandment, God punishes them. So that the slate is wiped clean, and that's why the Jewish people have suffered persecution. That's what the Yeshayahu is trying to point out. The Jewish people are permanently suffering persecution throughout their existence. It's what guarantees their existence, their continued existence. Because every time God slaps the Jews, that wipes the slate clean, and they can move on, and they never reach a point where they're worthy of being completely destroyed. What's this, David, and yet the Mashiach? What? I don't know what that says. Yeah, but as of themselves at that particular time, they were unworthy of being saved. It's only later the Gemara in Sota describes what they did and their rationale for what they did later. Now's not the time for a discussion of Lot's daughters, but if you look in the Gemara at the end of Sota, so it's a long discussion about the daughters of Lot. Anyway, back to so that is the nature of the Jewish people, Yeshayahu always says. It's one of the reasons why we're permanently suffering, because kav la kav, tzav la tzav, zer shom, we get punished on the basis of as we go. It's like a pay-as-you-go telephone. Instead of getting a regular telephone where you wait till the end of the month to get the bill, with the Jews, it's pay-as-you-go. You make a phone call, you do something wrong, you get paid for it. You get either get rewarded a bit, or you get punished for it straight away. So the Jews are on a pay-as-you-go system. The Goyim, not so much. The Goyim, God allows them to get away with murder for long periods of time. When the basket of their transgressions is full, he gets rid of them completely. That's not what he does with the Jews. So there's a segue here. There's a but. Really, as a result, when these four curses come on Yerushalayim, the reality is that Yerushalayim, there should be no survivors. But, there's a big but here. So before we go on to the but, there's a footnote here. In verses 12 to 20, God is saying via Yechezkel, in describing his four super categories of curses, arriving in a particular order. Now, from verses 12 to 20, the order that they were listed in was first famine, then animals or natural disasters, then the sword, and then the plague or sickness. But here in verse 21, when God references the curses, the tragedies, the destruction that will befall Yerushalayim, the order is changed, as Yechezkel says here in this verse. Cherev, v'rov, v'chayarov, v'deva, shilakti al Yerushalayim. When I, God, send all four of my curses on Yerushalayim, and he doesn't start with famine, he starts with the sword. The sword, then famine, and then wild beasts, and then the plague, then sickness against Yerushalayim. Now here, in this list, the sword moves from third place in the list to first place. So this is picked up by the Malbim, and because in the verses leading from 12 to 20, it's in a specific order. The order is famine, then natural disasters, then the sword, then plague. Here, the sword moves from third place into first place in the list. So the Malbim explains the change in order of the four curses. So he says like this, Shesholach kol arba shvatim b'pam achas. God sent all of these four curses on Yerushalayim consecutively. In this verse, God describes the order that they arrive. The first one was Cherev, the sword. Shekaseda Zabol Yerushalayim. She'al yidei Cherev ha'oyiv nasa rov ba'ir. V'chaya roa ochla harugim b'chutz v'deva b'fnim. The order that's given here in this verse is how it occurred in Yerushalayim. Firstly, there was Cherev. The Babylonian army arrived and surrounded and besieged the city of Yerushalayim. The effect of that siege was to cause rov, famine, inside the city. Now, because there was a famine inside the city, some inhabitants tried to escape the famine by breaking the siege and were massacred by the Babylonian army. And as the Medrash says, their carcasses were eaten by chayos roz, wild animals. And then, as the extended siege reached an apogee, a peak, people started to die, as is always the case when you've got a place that's under siege and you can't get any medical supplies in, you can't get any fresh water in, you can't get any food in. The result of that famine and that deprivation will lead to death. That will lead to disease and plague that broke out in the city because of the lack of water, the lack of food, and everything else that was going on in Jerusalem. So here the list is not in the order of severity. The list is in the order in which they afflicted Jerusalem. First, the surrounding of Jerusalem by the sword. Then, people who tried to break the siege and were killed and were gobbled up by wild animals. And then, then the siege, the effect of the siege was a famine inside the city. People tried to escape, were killed, and were gobbled up by wild animals. And finally, as the siege reached its peak, people started to die of devil, people started to die of disease, which obviously is commonplace in these circumstances. So, as the Barabinel says at the end of this verse, strictly speaking, the arrival of these four curses on Yerushalayim should have signaled the end of that society forever. Nevertheless, as we will now see, God will provide a partial get out of jail. He doesn't use this language. I'm just paraphrasing the Barabinel. God's going to provide a partial get out of jail free card to some of the inhabitants of Yerushalayim, who, as we know, will be sent to join their brothers and sisters who are already in exile in Babylonia. And there have been Jews in exile in Babylonia for already over 6 years. There's already been two waves of exile before Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, decided finally to destroy the city of Jerusalem and burn down the temple. There were already two waves of exiles, and there were already thousands and thousands of Jews living in Babylonia. Now that number, when eventually the temple is destroyed and Yerushalayim is destroyed, that number of Jews in Yerushalayim is going to be swelled up. And with the survivors of the apocalypse that's going to take place in Yerushalayim. And so now, what God does now, God in Yechezkel, they now address the Jews that are already in Babylon with the news. With the news that, yes, Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed. Yes, there's going to be terrible curses on Yerushalayim and a lot of people are going to be killed. But there's going to be people coming in exile to join you. Jews are going to be coming from Yehuda and from Yerushalayim, survivors of the land of Israel, so that eventually the population, by the time the Jews leave, or given permission to leave the Babylonian, which became the Persian Empire, in terms of where we are now, about 75 years on from the time of this prophecy, there'll be about 1.8 million Jews living in Babylonia. So this is a message in verse 22. This is a message to the Jews already in Babylon about the fact that there's going to be survivors and the status of those survivors who are going to be joining the other Jews that are already in Babylonia, says the prophet, verse 22. Vehinei nosra ba pleita hamutsayim bonim uvonos. There are going to be survivors left over from it, from the destruction of Yerushalayim. Sons and daughters are going to be brought out. Hinam yotzim aleichem, they'll be brought out to join you, to come and join you in Babylonia. Ure'isem es darakom ve'es alilosom, and you'll be able to observe they are coming to you. And when you see their ways and their deeds, v'nichamtem al hara asher heveti al Yerushalayim, and you, when you see the way that they behave, you'll be comforted over the evil, over the curse that I, God, have brought over Yerushalayim. All the trouble that I have brought upon it. Now, this is a very long-winded verse, and it contains a very strange word, which we've got to discuss. The word is hamutsa'im, which is a very strange word. But first, the verse seems to be internally contradictory. It seems to be a mixture of good news and bad news. So, if you read the verse, I'll just read the verse to you in English again. God tells the people of Babylonia, through Yechezkel, who's there, they're going to be survivors, left over from Yerushalayim. Sons and daughters are coming out. And when you see them coming to you in Babylonia and you observe the way that they behave, you'll agree with me. You'll be comforted over the fact that I destroyed Yerushalayim. So it's a very strange mix of good news and bad news. The good news is they're going to be survivors, left over from the destruction of Yerushalayim and Yehuda. Sons and daughters are being brought out. They're going to escape. Wonderful. Now the bad news. When you see them, and when you see the way they behave, you, the Babylonian Jews, will then be comforted about all the evil, all the destruction that I, God, have brought on Yerushalayim. In other words, you'll be able to understand why I did it, why I destroyed all these people, when you see the way that they behave when they get there. So it's like a contradiction. It's like a paradox, a mixture of good news. Jews are going to escape. And then when you see them, you'll think to yourself, well, how on earth did God allow these characters to escape? He should have destroyed them all. So this verse needs a little bit of unpacking. So, well, let's start off with God's first statement. First statement is about the survivors. The verse says, V'inei nosra bol paleta ha-mutsoyim bonim uvonos hinam yotzim aleichem. God tells the Jews of Babylonia, Yechezkel tells them, there's going to be survivors left over from the destruction of Yerushalayim. Children, sons and daughters are being brought out. They're going to escape. When the Jews of the Babylonian exile become aware of the apocalypse and the catastrophe that is overtaking Yerushalayim, remember, they have to hear about it on the grapevine. They would have assumed, or they will assume, remember, it's 5 years from now, or 4.5 years from now, when they eventually hear about it, they would assume that there would be no survivors. When the news comes from into Babylon, into the places where the Jews are living, that there's been a siege and a massacre, and there's been a famine, and there's been plague, and everything else that's been taking place in Yerushalayim, they would have assumed that there'd been no survivors. But since God has mercifully allowed some escapees and survivors to leave Yerushalayim, and more of them from the outlying areas of Yehuda, and they've arrived in Babylon, the Babylonian Jews would assume that all these escapees must be righteous. If God's gone to the trouble of absolutely, you know, bringing down all his best four tricks, famine and wild animals and the sword and plague on Yerushalayim, then it must be that the only people that could possibly survive that would be the righteous remnant of the population. Otherwise, why would God allow these particular people to survive the destruction? But then, there's going to be a realization, says God. When they actually arrive, these characters from Yerushalayim, Uri'isem es darkam ve'salilosa. When you see the way they behave, the survivors, the new exiles that arrive in Babylonia will not be the people you're expecting to see. There won't be anyone like Noah. There won't be anyone like Daniel. There won't be anyone like Eov amongst them. Far from it. As the Malbim says, he says, this is what you can expect to see. Darko. He tuchunas ha-nefesh u-manhigo shlo shora shel ha-pa'ulos. The survivors that will arrive in Babylon, far from being righteous, will be people driven along by evil thoughts and evil intent that can eventually eventually lead to evil action. He says the intent is called darkom. God describes it here as uri'isem as darkom. You'll see their ways. The word darkom means intent, what people intend to do. People think up, things that people think up. But more than that, they will be people unafraid to turn their evil thoughts and intent into evil action. That is called alilosa. So God describes the people that are going to arrive in Babylonia, uri'isem es darkom ve'es alilosa. You'll be visited the next wave of exiles are going to be a bunch of people with darkom, evil intent, and not only that, alilosa. They've got the will and the willpower and not only intent to do wicked things, but they don't even think about it, they do it. And says the Balbim, Kamashi Kosov, Shuvo na ish midarko hara, vihitivu darchecha malalecha. The prophet Yirmiyahu describes what these two words mean. He says, Shuvu na ish midarko, that a man should do teshuva from his evil ways. In other words, correct your evil intent. Not only that, not only correct your intent, but stop yourself from doing evil action. And this too is Yechezkel's intention here. He says, Gam kein al kavonazu. This too is Yechezkel's intention here regarding the nature of the surviving Jews that are going to arrive from Babylonia. There will be people with evil thoughts and intent, and that will lead them to perform evil actions. So, this is a double-edged sword. Like, the people of Babylonia are going to be so excited about the fact that there's been survivors, but when they see who these people are, they're not going to believe why God would ever consider leaving them, allowing them to live, because of the nature of the people that they are. Remember, we described earlier on in the book of Yechezkel that the actual righteous people of Yerushalayim were not saved. They were not saved because they had the ability to try and convince the evildoers in Yerushalayim to do teshuvah, and they minded their own business. They said, nothing to do with us. Let them do what they want. It's nothing to do with us. As the Gemara says, v'lo michale. They didn't rebuke these people that were involved in paganism, that were involved in adultery and sexual malpractice and involved in corruption, etc. So you're not going to get any righteous people being escaping and sent into exile. The ones that are going to, that are going to be saved are going to be the no goodniks. And v'nichamten. And then, says the apostle, then you Jews in Babylonia, v'nichamten. You Jews in Babylonia will be comforted about the evil that God brought on Yerushalayim. V'nichamten al hara asher hevetzi Yerushalayim. You'll be pleased that God destroyed. If these are like the best, if these are the best ones, these are the ones that made their way to Babylonia that you've let go, that managed to escape, thank God you destroyed the rest. And as the Malbim says, this will be true for two reasons. Tam Echod, he says, Lahatstik din Shomayim, Shlo Yomru b'nei Bovel, Madua Shofach Hashem Chamosu Aleihem Kolkach. Reason one is when the Babylonian Jews see the type of evil Jews from Yerushalayim that was spared from God, they will be able to justify to themselves that the destructive judgment of God on Yerushalayim was correct. And none of the Babylonian Jews would be able to ask, why did God treat Yerushalayim so badly? They'd say to themselves, huh, it's a miracle he didn't treat them even worse. That's number one. Hine yotzim aleichim ve'isim es darkom ve'oz nichamtem al hara she'hevesi kitiru shehoya din u'mishpot. After all, after seeing the evil remnant that God spared from Jerusalem, it was obvious that God was acting quite appropriately within the bounds of strict law and judgment. Like if these people, says the Malbim, were the best ones God could choose to spare, how evil must have been the ones that he didn't spare. So that's number one. Tam Beis, he says, Shabanei Golas Yechonya Hoyu Mitzdarim Ashehigle Eshem Kodem Lakach. He says, remember, the Jews living in Babylonia at the time of the destruction of the first temple, the ones that are already still there already, would have been in exile for many years. They were exiled along with King Yechonya. Yechezkel was included in that. They've been in Babylonia for over 6 years. And these Jewish exiles, these Jews that were already been exiled into Babylonia, were always bemoaning the fact that they had to live in exile for so long. Aval Atta. But now, V'nichanu eschem. But now, after the massacre and destruction that that's been brought on Yerushalayim, that they avoided, nachanu eschem. They've been comforted. Kilo al chinam osisi. They realize now that God did not take them into exile early without a good reason. Ki hoyas that toeles gadol shehotzi eschem kodem lakach. In fact, as it turned out, God did them a great favor by exiling them early, so that they missed seeing the eventual devastation that God brought in Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash, which could have included them. She'im hoyu nisharim ba'aretz, says the Malbim, because had they remained in Yerushalayim, they've been bemoaning the fact for years that they were sent into exile. But now, they're comforted by the fact that they were sent into exile. She'im hoyu nisharim ba'aretz, because had they remained in Yerushalayim, hoyu gam hei mashchisim, the chances were that they would also have been wiped out. So, there's this paradox here, that God's going to spare a lot of evil people, where, on the one hand, the Jews of Babylon are delighted that God has spared some Jews, but on the other hand, when they actually see who they're getting, the motley crew that are coming from Yehuda and Yerushalayim, they're going to wonder why on earth God allowed this lot to, number one, why God allowed this lot to survive, and number two, how lucky they were to have been exiled earlier and not suffered the four curses that came to Yerushalayim. And that's what it means when Nichamtem. You'll be comforted by the fact. So, just a footnote before we move on to the final final verse. What's very strange here is if those who survived the Holocaust in Yerushalayim had made their way into the Babylonian exile, or who will make their way into the Babylonian exile, were not really worthy of being saved, as Yechezkel says here. He says here quite clearly, Ureisem es darkom es alilosom. You're going to see, you people in Babylonia, when these escapees from Yerushalayim and Yehuda arrive, you're going to see how evil they are. They've got evil intent and evil action. The utter disregard for Judaism will be clearly visible. Then the question is, then why did God save them? After all, it wasn't as if the complete annihilation of all the Jews of Yehuda and Yerushalayim would have meant an end to the Jewish people in Judaism, right? If God would have destroyed Yerushalayim and Yehuda, and everybody in the country would have been destroyed, that wouldn't have been a problem. That wouldn't have been a problem to the promise God made that the Jewish people would never have been destroyed. After all, there were already Jews living in Babylonia already. There was already a thriving Jewish diaspora in Babylonia. So why did God allow these Jews to survive? He could have fulfilled his promise to the Jewish people, that they'd never be totally wiped out, by the fact that there was a thriving Jewish diaspora already in Babylonia, and let him just wipe out everybody in Yerushalayim and Yehuda. The Jewish people would have continued to survive. Excuse me. The Jewish people would have continued to survive. So this is the question. This is the question that's asked in the Medrash, it's asked in the Gemara. So the answer, I'll give you the answer that the Medrash gives. This is in Bereishis Rabbah. And this goes to something I mentioned right at the start of this verse. And that's the unusual word. It's a unique word in Tanakh. It's called Hamutsa'im. There's a word in this verse. It says, V'hinei nosra bo pleita Hamutsa'im bonim uvanos. There are survivors left over from Yerushalayim, sons and daughters. Says the Medrash. The Medrash says on this verse, Hinei motz in Hamutsayim, he says, Hinei motziim. They are taking out motziim, sons and daughters. That's what it should have said. Hinei motziim. God's arranging for young daughters, sons and daughters, to be brought out, motziim, from Yerushalayim. That's not what it says, said the Medrash. It says Hamutza'im, sons and daughters who are being taken out. What does the word Mutza'im mean? So the Medrash says the word Mutza'im actually means those who will emerge. Mutza'im does not mean those that are going to be spared, taken out. It means those who are going to emerge. And the Medrash says that Yechezkel's expression here, that those survivors who turn out to be dirty, rotten, no good Jews, who the Babylonian Jews won't be able to work out how on earth God has allowed these to survive, they are not Motziim, they are not escapees from Yerushalayim, they are Mutzoim. They are people who when the verse says Hamutzorim, Hamutzoim bonum bonim uvonos, they're going to emerge from these evil people, sons and daughters. Meaning, the evil people that survived the devastation and destruction of Yerushalayim were not saved because they deserved to be saved themselves, per se. Why were they saved? They were saved due to the merit of the righteous boys and girls, the bonim uvonos, who were destined to emerge, descend from them in the future. So that's how you read this verse, says the Medrash. You go back to the start of the verse. Vehine nosra bar plata. God's going to provide survivors. Hamutzoim bonim uvonos. They themselves are evil, but they are going to produce what's going to emerge from these evil survivors. Bonim uvonos. The reason why they're surviving is because they're going to produce sons and daughters. And as it happens, as we know, the next generation in Babylonia, after the devastation of Yerushalayim and Yehuda, after Yerushalayim and Yehuda are destroyed, that next generation, the Bonim Uvonos, the children, the second generation of these wicked people that were saved in Yerushalayim, from the devastation of Yerushalayim, are going to turn the corner and create the first ever, what we would call the first ever Baal Teshuva movement, which would take place in Babylonia, which will eventually lead to God saying, right, time to go home. You've done your job. You've rejected idol worship, which they did in Babylonia. They rejected any type of adultery, and they didn't do so well with corruption, but they two out of three isn't bad. There was a huge Baal Teshuva movement, and that was as a result of Hamutzoim, as this verse says. Hamutzoim bonim uvonos. The ones that would emerge, the descendants of these evil survivors, would produce a generation of righteous people that would lead to the return to Zion. And finally, we come to the last verse in chapter 14. I'll say over the verse, maybe we'll get time to finish the chapter. V'nichamu, God says, V'nichamu eschem, kisiru es darkom ve'es alilosa. And they will comfort you, because you will see their way and their deeds. V'idatem ki lochinem osisi es kol asher osisi bo. And then you will know that not for nothing have I done all that I have done, says God. Ne'um Hashem Elokim, says God. Now, without the Medrash I just told you on the previous verse, this final verse would absolutely appear to be superfluous. It's a mere repetition of the end of verse 22. If you look at the end of verse 22, verse 22 finishes off, Ure'isem es darakom ve'es alilosom. When these survivors of Yerushalayim arrive in Babylonia, you'll see their evil ways. V'nichamtem al hara, and then you'll understand why I destroyed Yerushalayim. And then here he says, in verse 23, says exactly the same thing. V'nichamu eschem kitiru es darakom ves alilosom. And you will be comforted. They will comfort you. These escapees will comfort you because you'll see their way and their deeds. So, meaning, when the survivors arrive in exile in Babylonia, you'll wonder why these evil people were spared by God. And you know, you'll be happy about the fact that you escaped. You managed to go into exile earlier. Now, this verse 23 and the end of verse 22 seem to be a repetition of each other. But that's without the last medrash, because now we can read verse 23 differently. V'nichamu es, this is the way you read verse 23. V'nichamu eschem, kisiru es darakom ves alilosa. When you'll be comforted when you see the ways, the intent, and the behavior, not of those that escaped Yerushalayim, but you'll be comforted by the behavior of the righteous children of the next generation in Babylonia. That's what will comfort you. And then says the apostle, Vidaten kilo chinam osisi es kol asher osisi. And then you'll know that it wasn't for nothing that I have done what I did. Meaning you'll understand why I, God, chose this particular group of evildoers to be the ones to escape Yerushalayim, whilst everyone perished. Because their descendants will produce the Baal Teshuvah movement, and also produce the next generation of the great leaders of Israel. Eskol asher osisi bo nom Hashem. So this verse 23, although it appears to be a repetition of verse 22, it's telling the Jews of Babylonia, don't be disheartened about the escapees, those that are exiled from Yerushalayim, the destruction of Yerushalayim. You look at them and you think to yourself, my God, why did God allow these people to survive? But when you see the next generation, and how they turned the corner, and how they became Baalei Teshuvah, they did Teshuvah, then says God, Vidaten kilo chinam osisi es kol asher osisi bo. Then you'll understand why I did it the way I did it. Why these people, these particular evildoers survived. It's because they were destined to produce my next generation. My generation of righteous Jews, my generation of Baalei Teshuvah, who will lead the Jewish people back from the exile in Babylonia. And that concludes chapter 14, perfectly, on time. Bang on time. Absolutely on time. And we're up to chapter 15. Now, chapter 15, I'm not going to say anything about it. I'll leave it till next week. We'll pick up with the beginning of chapter 15 next week. Please God, we should all have a good week. Our army should protect us, and God should protect our army. There should be no more of these piguim in anywhere in the land of Israel. God should protect us all. Everyone should have a good week, and we should arrive at the same time next Monday in health and happiness. Called up to everybody. Thank you for paying attention. If anybody's got a question, now's the time. If not, I'll see you next week. Kol Tov. Have a great week. Yeah.